It's time to introduce our speaker, but I'm gonna turn it over to Lisa to introduce our speaker tonight. Would you be so kind?
Thank you, Michael. Yes, I will. Hi, guys. I'm an addict. My name is Lisa. I have.
Lisa.
Hi,
Hi,
Lisa.
guys. I have the greatest honor of introducing our speaker for this evening. This gentleman is someone that I met quite early on in my recovery through the meetings here at Higna. He carries a very strong message of recovery. I really admire how he works his program, and I'm very grateful to know him and to have him as a part of my recovery. But without further ado, I will hand you over to the wonderful Keith.
Thank you, Lisa.
Hello, everyone. I'm Keith, and I'm recovering from addiction.
Hello,
Hello,
Keith.
Keith.
Hi,
Welcome,
okay.
everybody. My clean date is 4th of July, 2000. I whenever I'm asked to be of service by Sharon at a meeting, I always do this, the same thing. I pray about it because I have no idea what to do or to say. I really don't. And when I was new, I heard a guy say that, and I thought, well, I'm going to do what he did. And that's how things work in Narcotics Anonymous. I hear things, I see things that make sense to me, and I start doing them. So anyway, what came out of my my prayers today was IP number 5, another look. And so I'm going to read a paragraph from that, and then I'm just going to trust that a higher power is going to use me the vehicle for its intelligence, and something might come out of my mouth that makes sense. Again, this is from IP number 5, and addiction is not goodwill. Addiction insulates us from people, places, and things outside our own world of getting, using, and finding ways and means to continue the process. Hostile, resentful, self-centered, and self-concerned, we cut off all outside interests as our illness progresses. We live in fear and suspicion of the very people we have to depend on for our needs. This torches every area of our lives, and anything not completely familiar becomes alien and dangerous. Our world shrinks, and isolation is its goal. This might well be the true nature of our disorder. It's been my experience that isolation and its consequences are, in fact, the true nature of our disorder, of my disorder. I didn't know it until I completed that very first set of steps, but there were examples of addictive thinking and behavior in me as a child long before I picked up dope for the first time. And I didn't know that until that first set of steps, and I had a sponsor who was very keen on sponsees writing about that and kind of looking for those patterns of thinking and behavior, not kind of settling for the idea that, addiction started when when I picked up for the first time. In fact, it was already there. And when I was in first grade, I used to have to walk from my little neighborhood, which was the poor side of the river, across a bridge to a better side of town to go to school. And I remember I used to always resent these people because, I lived in this kind of a shack because we were poor, and these people had like really nice houses. And I'd have to walk by these nice houses to get to the little school, right? And I remember I would open up their mailboxes and I would tear their mail in half for these houses that I was walking by. Well, it turns out you can't do that. And so here I am, just this little tiny kid, 6 years old, and there's FBI agents at the door because you can't destroy the United States mail. It's a crime. And I remember I was hiding under my bed and I could see their kind of wing-tipped FBI shoes. That's what I remember most. And they talked to me about why I had to stop doing that. And when I'd completely forgotten about that, but when I wrote about it later on, I could see, that I was just seething full of envy and resentment, character defects. and that I didn't possess the capability of containing those character defects. You know, and that was a huge awakening for me. And there were, you know, many other examples. And all through this time, you know, it became clear through that first set of steps that in active addiction, there was no goodwill in my life. I did not have, I was not, I was no longer capable of that normal human compassion. No more, I wasn't capable of having goodwill toward others, even, you know, and especially people in my family. And I didn't realize that that had existed before I got loaded the first time. I think I was 12 the first time I got high. And these were, that first set of steps rocked my world. Because I had no idea what the truth was. And, you know, for me, that's the genius, the magic of the 12 steps, is that if I work the 12 steps diligently, they will reveal to me what's inside of me. They will reveal the truth about myself. And they will give me a little bit, at least a little bit more clarity around my life experiences. And in this case, the consequences of not being able to have goodwill toward other people and therefore not being really able to have relationships with other people. That lack of goodwill really makes it difficult to have relationships with other human beings. And because I didn't trust anybody. And I had good reasons. A lot of bad things had been done to me as a child, and I had good reasons not to trust other people. But the solution I came up with to deal with what had been done with me in, as a child and to deal with all the insanity in my mind was to get loaded. And that was the solution I stuck with for a long time. I mean, I used dope for 28 years. And and it allowed me to stay alive. I very much believe that, you know, drugs kept me alive until I could get to NA. And NA kept me alive until I could get to doctors, because what I needed was doctors. What I needed was people to help me work through what had been done to me, you know, in a healthy way. And I did that work, finally. And it wasn't easy, but I did it. And that was the other thing that that very first set of steps revealed to me, is that I got loaded, not because of what was going out in the world, not because of losing something or gaining something or getting a job or losing a job. I got loaded every day because of what was inside of me. I got loaded every day because of how I felt about myself. Nobody made me get loaded. I liked getting loaded. I was able to, in my mind, I was able to be someone other than who I was. I was able to be someone that had a different history than I had. In my mind, I had goodwill toward other people because I wasn't capable of having relationships, so I would have them in my mind. And in my mind, I had goodwill toward other people. I just didn't have it in reality. And that first set of steps showed me that. And the lack of goodwill manifested itself across every aspect of my life. But the place where that lack of goodwill was most pronounced and had the most kind of crushing impact on my life is working. You know, I couldn't get along with other people. I got to Narcotics Anonymous at 42 years old. And there's that small little section in the step working guides and the fourth step about, you know, where you get to do an employment kind of history. So I did an employment history, a very detailed one. And by the time I got clean and made it to Narcotics Anonymous, I had had 63 jobs. And I remember reading this with my sponsor, and both of us are just laughing because it's so absurd. I mean, 63 jobs. And every one of those jobs, I was either fired from or I raged quit. Or just refused to show up. And in all of those jobs, this lack of goodwill produced the consequences that caused me to lose that job. In every single one of those places, I didn't have goodwill for other people. And there's no way to hide that. It comes out. And people don't want to work with you when you don't have goodwill toward them. And it's very difficult to maintain relationships in a balanced life in the absence of goodwill. But that's what addiction had done to me. That's what using every day had done to me. It turned me into a person really incapable of living in the world, other than the world in my imagination. You know, that safe place where bad things didn't happen. So that very first set of steps, you know, laid the foundation for continued recovery. You know, I was fortunate. My first sponsor kind of made sure that I got grounded in the fellowship before we got too far into the steps. And I've come to believe that I think that's very important. You know, you see people with a couple of days clean wanting to start a set of steps, and that's just not going to work. You know, the 12 steps of Narcotics Anonymous are in chapter 4 of the basic text for a reason. We're supposed to work chapters 1, 2, and 3 before we do a set of steps. That's why we organized the book that way. And, you know, I wasn't there when they wrote the first edition of the basic text, but I'm pretty sure somebody said, hey, you know, the steps shouldn't be chapter 1. You know, there's all these other things you have to do first. And I came to understand over time that chapter 1, 2, and 3 is what really gave me the foundation of membership in Narcotics Anonymous. And it also allowed me to build up what I like to call some spiritual endurance so that I could deal with, emotionally deal with that very first set of steps. Because, like I said, I was 42, so I had a whole lot of baggage. And that first set of steps was, it's like taking a knife and cutting your chest open. You know, it's very painful and very difficult and very challenging. And it's supposed to be. It's not supposed to be easy. I don't know where people get the idea that, you know, working the 12 steps is easy. It's simple, but it's not easy. Straightforward, but it's not easy. It takes a certain degree. It takes a lot of willingness and it takes some courage. And I don't have either of those things. And that's where a higher power comes in for me. You know, I can't speak for anybody else. I have a higher power because I cannot self-generate the things I need in life. I can't self-generate goodwill toward other people. I have to ask a higher power to help me with that. I can't self-generate willingness. I have to ask a higher power to help me with that. You know, I can't self-generate any of the things that I need. And I attribute that to the fact that I have the disease of addiction. And the disease of addiction has many consequences. We focus heavily on the use of mood and mind-altering chemicals, but that's just one aspect of the disease of addiction. And it took me a long time to understand that. You know, when I got here, I thought I had a drug problem. It turns out I did have a drug problem, but I have all this other stuff too. And, you know, the profound selfishness and self-centeredness, you know, that complete absence of goodwill toward others. These things made life impossible, you know, and it took a long time. It wasn't until I was well into another set of steps that I really kind of just started settling in kind of being okay. And it took, I don't think, I think it took 15 years for, and a few sets of steps for me to kind of feel okay. And I did 5 solid years of very intense work outside the program to try to deal with those things, and it helped. It helps a lot. I don't know what the percentage is, but I think at least a simple majority of us need help outside the program, because we've got issues with trauma and abuse and all kinds of other gnarly stuff. And the 12 steps in Narcotics Anonymous are not a treatment plan for abuse, and they're not a treatment plan for mental health. We need help outside the program for these things. And for me, I came to understand that it's a concurrent path. These things are happening at the same time. I'm doing my work outside the program. I'm working on my 12 steps. I'm going to meetings. All these things are happening together at the same time. And I feel fortunate, feel blessed that I was around people that were open-minded, that understood that an addict needs a variety of kinds of help, that the 12 steps are just the beginning, that they're not going to solve all the issues that I have. But the great thing about the 12 steps is that the 12 steps revealed to me these things in my past that I had so assiduously kept buried. The 12 steps reveal something closer to the truth about my life experience that needs to be dealt with. And the 12 steps tells me, hey, there's the door. Go get help for this. I can't help you. And fortunately, there were people in the program who told me that. Those exact words, we can't help you with this. You need to go get help for this. And that's what we're supposed to do. That's what being each other's eyes and ears means. We're supposed to be paying attention to each other and how we're doing. And when it comes to the people that we're close to, we're supposed to say something. I need people to tell me. If they see me, if people that care about me see me going sideways, I need them to tell me. I am not going to be one of those people you ever hear whine about someone taking my inventory. I'm going to be grateful that someone cared enough about me to tell me when I'm going sideways. Because it's in our literature. I am not capable of defeating my own self-deception. I'm not. I need someone else to do that because I can't do it. I can't see through my own bullshit. That's why I have a sponsor. That's why I have friends in the program. I need people to call me on my bullshit. Because otherwise, I'm going to be in trouble again. And, I got a good number of years clean now, but I'm not exempt. I'm certainly not free of the bondage of addiction and the bondage of self-centeredness. I never will be completely free. And I'm certainly not exempt from relapse. Nobody is. As I was going through my cancer treatment, I came to understand that cancer is just like addiction in that it has two states. It's either active or it's in remission. Right now, my cancer is in remission and the disease of addiction is in remission. But that's no guarantee that they're not going to come back. And I have things that I have to do for my cancer, just like I have things I have to do for the disease of addiction to keep myself safe. And I have to do both of those things. The things that I have to do to try to keep cancer at bay is different, but, I still have to do those things. Daily maintenance. I don't know what life has coming for me, but, I'm 63 years old, 63 and a half, and I'm sick. So my goal is simple. I want to get through what's left of my life without causing harm. That's it. I don't ever want to add another name to an eight-step list. I don't ever want to have to write another nine-step. I don't ever want to have to need 8 and 9 again. And if I practice these principles in all my affairs and use the 10th step when I fall, then I'll never have to do 8 and 9 again. And that's my goal. I want to die with a clean ninth step. That's my goal. Yeah. And I'm going to go ahead and I'm not sure how long I'm supposed to be talking, so I'm going to go ahead and finish with this. You know, one of the things that came up for me when I was when I first got diagnosed with cancer was, I remember when I was new, I would hear this guy that I know, this old timer. He's a real old timer, you know, 40 years. And he would say that he wanted to die clean. That was his goal. And I remember, you know, being a young addict, just kind of nodding and shaking my head, which is what I did to everything you guys said. I'm like, yeah, yeah, right on. Because I hadn't formed my own experience of recovery yet. And so when I got cancer, I had to deal with, what does that mean? What does it mean to die clean? You know, and I came to realize that for many of us, probably most of us, dying, the idea of dying clean really isn't about the absence of mood and mind-altering chemicals. Because most of us are going to be, unless you're lucky, unless you die suddenly, you know, in a car accident or a heart attack or something, you know, most of us are going to be, you know, old, sick, and messed up and on some sort of medication. If we even know, you know, that we're on it, you know. And therefore, dying clean has to mean more than that. It has to be more than just the absence of substances as we age. And what I came to understand is that for me, it meant, you know, not leaving a mess for other people to clean up. Because, you know, I don't know if you've got, but I don't know how many, I've lost track of the number of times another addict has said to me, oh, yeah, we're getting together tomorrow. We're going to clean out so-and-so's apartment after they died. And I thought that's really great that we do that. But I don't want to leave a mess. So I got my affairs in order. You know, I have a living will. I have a medical power of attorney and a financial power of attorney and all the things you need so you don't leave a mess for other people to clean up. That's what that is, you know, come to mean to me about dying clean. So I'm very grateful when I get the opportunity to share. I hope, you know, I just keep believing that a higher power is going to continue to use me as a vehicle for its intelligence. Because otherwise, I got nothing. I got nothing for you guys. Without that power, I got nothing. You know, and that's just the way it is. So here I am. You know, I'm okay today. You know, and as some of the people here who are also on the illness meeting know, you know, today I'm not in real serious pain, and that's a really good day when I'm not in real serious pain. It's a really good day, and my cancer's still in remission, and I'm still capable of experiencing joy. You know, the everyday simple joy of life. You know, when the sun shines and there's birds chirping and all the little simple things in life that are really terrific. I am capable of experiencing those things now. I wasn't before. And the reason I'm capable now is because of the 12 steps of Narcotics Anonymous. That's where the change comes. And that help outside the program, that's where the change comes. Because that change needed to happen inside of me. The world wasn't going to change to accommodate me. I had to change to accommodate the world as it is, and to accept the world as it is, and to accept myself as I am. And because of the 12 steps, you know, I have a degree of self-acceptance today that I never had before. And that's been my experience, that our ability to feel joy is directly tied to the level of self-acceptance we have. I'm grateful that I'm, you know, able to change joy. My sponsor says that I've changed a lot since I got cancer. You know, he says that I'm much more open now than I was before. And it's interesting. You never know where the teachers are going to be, who's going to be the one that carries the message for you. You're never going to know who's the one that's going to teach you something real important. And illness does that. Illness is a teacher amongst the other things that it is. It also is a teacher. It, you know, there's a clarifying that happens when you're sick. It's one more way that you get to see the world a little more clearly. Because you start to understand mortality, and you start to understand there's not much time left, and you start to understand there's just no more time for dope fiend bullshit. There's just no more time. Waste on dope fiend bullshit. You know, there's just this little precious bit of time left, and I don't want to waste it on dope fiend bullshit. So I'm going to keep coming to meetings, and I'm going to keep being part of this program because, you know, I want more joy. I want more joy. And Narcotics Anonymous is the way to get it. So thanks for letting me share. Thanks for inviting me. It's an honor to serve. And I'll keep coming back. Thanks.